You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. Today's date, believe it or not, is the 1st of October, 2025. And of course, this is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Lucky for you. I normally don't do shows like this, but I couldn't help myself. Someone told me about this rant that Benjamin Netanyahu gave at the UN. And for some bizarre reason, I decided to listen to it. I actually read it. And it is bizarre. It is a diatribe. And it shows the utter isolation, the bleeding of the Zionist idea. You have neocons like Candace Owens turning on Israel. We all know what happened to poor Charlie Kirk. It's been very obvious from the start. Now, I'm not going to quote the entire speech. It's really not worth it. He did it on the 26th of September this year. And it's a rant in the true sense of the word. Almost nothing he says within it is true or factual. He plays on the ignorance of the Western population in general. His target audience? Clearly not Jews, but the Goyim, especially from the U.S., and Western Europe. He gave an over-emotional, hate-filled harangue, again, proving the isolation of the Zionist idea today, something I would never believe would happen in my lifetime. And I truly wish Michael Collins Piper, Willis Cardo, were here to see it. At best, it's just wartime propaganda. At worst, it's the total death of diplomacy and, what I've been talking about for a long time, the normalization of terrorism as foreign policy. This is the opposite of diplomacy. It is almost entirely neurotic projection. It's to be expected, though. Israel is a wounded animal backed into a corner. And what do animals do when they're wounded and backed into a corner? By the middle of the speech, roughly, at the UN, the hall emptied out. The walkout was covered in most news agencies. To a great extent, some outlets were leading their reports about this rather than on the content of the speech. There were at least 77 countries that either refused to show or walked out. These include, but are not limited to, Turkmenistan, Turkey, very significant, Venezuela, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. You note, there's no United Arab Emirates there. Uzbekistan, Colombia, North Macedonia, Bangladesh, Brazil, Chile, Liberia, Jordan, Bosnia, North Korea, Syria, Spain, who has really gone into an anti-Zionist mode, Burma, Ireland, Indonesia, Kuwait, and Kenya. And Kenya is quite significant. It's normally almost a semi-American colony. But there were many, many others. By the time he finished it, you see in the picture that we're using here in this post, he spoke to an almost empty hall by the time it was over. Now what I'm going to do is I want to quote certain parts of the speech, and I have to make comments about it. That's really the best way to do this. Mr. President, he starts, the families of our hostages languishing in the dungeons of Gaza. Ladies and gentlemen, last year I stood at this podium and I showed this map. It shows the curse of Iran's terror axis. This axis threatens the peace of the whole world. It threatens the stability of our region and the very existence of my country, Israel. Iran was rapidly developing a massive nuclear weapons program and a massive ballistic missile program. These were meant not just to destroy Israel, they were also meant to threaten the U.S. and blackmail nations everywhere. Now, listeners know I've been talking about this for a long time. There's no evidence of this. Iran is a first world country. They have their own missile systems that they make themselves. As far as nuclear weapons, there is nothing, no evidence whatsoever. He continues, from Gaza, Yahya Sinwar dispatched waves of Hamas terrorists. Now, I want to note, Yahya Sinwar, I haven't mentioned him before. He was head of Hamas. He was an expert in Jewish history, fluent in Hebrew. He was killed in combat with the IDF October 16, 2024. According to IDF sources, he was the head of the organization, and he fought to the bitter end. It took a tank round to finally bring him down. They stormed into Israel on October 7th, and they committed acts of unspeakable savagery. Well, in reality, it was a relatively small invasion force. From Lebanon, Hassan Nasrallah launched thousands of missiles and rockets at our cities, terrorizing our citizens. In Syria, the murderous dictator Assad hosted Iran's forces, tightening a noose of death around our throats. In Yemen, the Houthis launched ballistic missiles at Israel while choking global trade at the mouth of the Red Sea. Of course, they did not. We know exactly what they were doing. But what happened over the last year, he says? We've hammered the Houthis. No, they're still fully functional. We've crushed the bulk of Hamas's terror machine. No, the IDF is losing to them badly. We crippled Hezbollah, taking out most of its leaders and much of the weapons arsenal. Remember those beepers, the pagers? We paged Hezbollah. And believe me, they got the message. And thousands of terrorists dropped to the ground. And of course, as he well knows, many, many civilians, including children. We destroyed Assad's armaments in Syria, which of course, as we know, we predicted very easily, led to chaos and mass death, which of course is perfect for Israel. There is no government in Syria. There is no government in Syria that could rule anything beyond Damascus. Let's keep that in mind. And he says, we deterred Iran's Shiite militias in Iraq. We don't hear about them very much. Most importantly, above everything else, I can say to you, what we did in the past year, in this past decade, we devastated Iran's atomic weapons and ballistic missile programs. Now that's how he starts this off. Now, I don't want to repeat a lot of what I've already said, but we know that the IDF is overstretched. They're stretched out over numerous fronts. They've achieved nothing that they have sought out to do. Tactics have changed entirely for the IDF. There's still 1.5 million Palestinians around in Gaza. They're supposed to be forced into an area of, 35 square miles? It's a concentration camp. Typhus and polio are already ravaging these refugee camps. Far worse than the unrealistic Zionist plans for the larger camps. I've mentioned all of this before. I hate it when they blaspheme the Old Testament Operation Gideon's Chariot. This operation destroyed the last functional hospital on the Strip, thus increasing the kill count. We all know the IDF deliberately attacked medical supplies warehouse at Nasser Hospital, Khan Yunis. After three attempts to take Khan Yunis, the city, the IDF was finally defeated. So it takes its rage out on civilians. Hamas skillfully uses rocket-propelled grenades, booby traps, sniper fire, anti-tank weapons, a lot of hit-and-run stuff. And you know the Israelis are lying through their teeth about their casualties. Israel has failed to take Beit Hamun in the north and many other cities after repeated attempts. The entire siege of North Gaza was a failure. That's where this February ceasefire plan came into action. Of course, it's long gone. But as far as urban warfare is concerned, Hamas has either won or has made Israel bleed badly. Okay, back to Netanyahu. This is what he said. Here's where things stand today. Half the Houthi leadership in Yemen, they're gone. Yahya Sinwar in Gaza, gone. Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon, gone. The Assad regime in Syria, gone. Those missiles in Iraq, well, they're still deterred. And their leaders, if they attack Israel, will also be gone. And for Iran's top military commanders and its top nuclear scientists, well, they're gone too. Now, it's always strange to me. He seems to think that a movement is in its leadership. He's been living under a rock for some time. These groups that he refers to are decentralized, are highly adaptable. One has nothing to do with the other. Killing these nuclear scientists would have nothing to do with nuclear weapons, were acts of terror. These were civilians. He has crippled nothing. None of these forces, they may have had setbacks, but they have not been drastically harmed. Israeli attacks on Yemen, as I've said, some of the single largest strikes on the capital, Sana. Allegedly, they killed the prime minister, but the general staff is there. They didn't see this coming. The military command is in good shape. They continue to launch drone and missile strikes on Israel today, solely in opposition to the war on Palestinian and Gaza and the occupied West Bank. Israel functions by terror and terror only. Anyway, Netanyahu. Israel's 12-day war with Iran, which I named Operation Rising Lion. That's from the Bible, by the way. And he says this in a very condescending way. And that refers to Numbers 23:24, where it said, "Behold, the people shall rise up as a great lion and lift up himself as a young lion. He shall not lie down until he eat of the prey and drink the blood of the slain." That's from the Bible, he said. Now, he doesn't quote that. I'm quoting that for you. Then arrogantly, he says, "This 12-day war will go down the annals of military history." He's talking about the bombing attacks on Iran. "Our daring pilots neutralized Iran's missile defenses and took control of the skies over Tehran. You saw this. Israeli fighter pilots and American B-2 pilots bombed Iran's nuclear enrichment sites. I want to thank President Trump for his bold and decisive action. President Trump and I promised to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons, and we delivered. We removed an existential threat to Israel and a mortal threat to the civilized world. We lifted a dark cloud that could have claimed the lives of millions and millions." Iran has always been clear. Its nuclear program is for when the oil runs out. It's not going to last forever. Iran's economy is highly diverse, only partially dependent on oil. Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. The International Atomic Energy Agency have not found any evidence of any sort of production. Of course, Israel, 90 nuclear warheads at least. The House of Commons, the library, says Israel is thought to still be producing plutonium for weapons purposes. How long has Netanyahu been saying this? Since 1992, at least. In the early 2000s, Tehran was one, you know, they wanted to build a nuclear weapon, allegedly. That's where the sanctions came from. Nuclear deal in 2015, the sanctions were lifted, but they heavily restricted Iran's enrichment capacity. Well, Donald Trump left the deal in 2018. So what is Iran to do? It's only a 6% enrichment. It doesn't have plants or any interest in going to the 90% necessary. And it's a completely different chemical anyway. For weaponry. There were no nuclear weapons facilities, nor were these attacks successful, even if there were. It's like these people, he believes they're stupid. They've been anticipating this for a very long time. They're all deep underground anyway. So Netanyahu is lying on multiple levels. He uses one lie as a foundation for another. Netanyahu continues, "But ladies and gentlemen, we must remain vigilant." I don't know who "we" is. "We must remain absolutely clear-minded and vigilant. We must not allow Iran to rebuild its military nuclear capacities. Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium, these stockpiles must be eliminated. And tomorrow, UN Security Council sanctions on Iran must be snapped back. I think that means reimposed, although they never left. Thanks to the resolve of our people, the courage of our soldiers, the bold decisions we took, Israel rebounded from its darkest day to deliver one of the most stunning military comebacks in history. But we're not done yet. The final remnants of Hamas are holed up in Gaza City. They vow to repeat the atrocities of October 7th. Again and again and again, they say, no matter how diminished their forces might be. That is why Israel must finish the job. That is why we have to do it as quickly as possible. The law, or the decree, that Israel has, or Netanyahu has put out, that there is to be no social media pictures or videos of what Iran has done to Israel, I think is still in force. It has absolutely decimated the country. Now, finish the job, that phrase got people very upset. There's only starvation in Gaza. Everything that he's saying about his enemies is true only of Israel. Typical projection. Frankly, the IDF is fighting on way too many fronts. They're stretched thin, even if it's only one. Desertion, brave soldiers, desertion is a huge problem, even among regulars, let alone conscripts. Now get this. Ladies and gentlemen, much of the world no longer remembers October 7th. Literally everyone does. But we'll remember. Israel remembers October 7th. On that date, Hamas carried out the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust. They slaughtered 1,200 innocent people, including 40 Americans, by the way, and foreign nationals from dozens of countries represented here. They beheaded men. They raped women. They even burned babies alive. They burned babies alive in front of their parents. What monsters. He actually said that at the UN. Numerous organizations, including the UN, have scoured every hospital. Well, there's no hospitals left, but mortuaries, coroners, every clinic, insurance companies. There's been no beheaded infants or anything like this. No rape kits were ever conducted. And there's no NGO in the area that said that they were. Many organizations say this. Israeli soldiers say that there were no examples of these beheadings. He's losing it. He continues. These monsters took more than 250 people hostage. These included Holocaust survivors, grandmothers, grandmothers, their grandchildren. Who takes hostages of grandmothers and grandchildren? Well, Hamas does. So far, we've brought 207 of these hostages, all of whom were young, by the way, but 48 still remain in the dungeons of Gaza. 20 are still alive, starved, tortured, deprived of any daylight, deprived of humanity. What would be the point of taking an ancient Holocaust survivor hostage? They could die any day. Now, when he does this point in his speech, it's interesting. Some PR firm came up with it. He then looks into the camera, and he says, "Now, I am speaking directly to the hostages. If you can hear me, right?" And he goes on, but it's uninteresting. But it's very very PR like. You know, I'm speaking to the hostages. We will save you. This kind of nonsense, ladies and gentlemen. If Hamas agrees to our demands, the war could end today. Gaza would be demilitarized. Israel would retain overriding security control, and a peaceful civilian authority would be established by Gazans and others committed to peace with Israel. Of course, you understand that the war in Gaza has affected every Israeli, but I am sure that there are people in New York, London, Melbourne, anywhere else that are probably thinking, well, what does that have to do with me? The answer is everything, because our enemies are your enemies. I guarantee you almost every single one of my listeners know what that last phrase means. That's been Israeli propaganda forever. Our enemies are your enemies has been the slogan to get the U.S. to go to war for Israel. Well, the truth of the matter is, Israel, with full political and military support from the U.S., has blocked any attempt to reach any ceasefire in Gaza. Netanyahu and government, they've been blasted by their own people. Families held in Gaza. Protested the call to end the war and return all the captives. He could do that today, too. Back on March 18th, Israel torpedoed a ceasefire deal it had made with Hamas by killing more than 400 Palestinians and starting a months-long total blockade that led to famine in the enclave. Israel claimed it agreed to a ceasefire proposal again, only immediately to bomb Qatar, and that failed attempt to wipe out the entire political leadership of Hamas outside Gaza and, well, kill any hope of negotiations. So, that's the truth of the matter. He does something else now. This is what Netanyahu says. This is at the UN. Let's do something else. Another first at the UN. Let's do a pop quiz. Raise your hand if you know the answer. First question. Who shouts death to America? Is it A, Iran, B, Hamas, C, Hezbollah, D, the Houthis, or E, all the above? All the above, correct. All the above. Second question. Who has murdered Americans and Europeans in cold blood? Is it A, Al-Qaeda, B, Hamas, C, Hezbollah, D, Iran, or E, all of the above? Correct again. All the above. Well, of course, there was hardly anyone in the hall at the time, so he's really talking to himself at this point. But this outrageous rhetoric. One thing he definitely didn't want was follow-up questions. Why do they hate the U.S.? Well, it's Israel. Yet time and again, Arab leaders, militia leaders, have said that the American population is not the target. The state apparatus, its elites, different story. Well, on the other hand, Israel starves whole populations. Netanyahu continues. So here's the point I want to make. Yeah, we know the point you want to make. It's been pretty clear up to this point. Our enemies hate us all with equal venom. Now, if you want to talk about projection, there you have it. They want to drag the modern world back to the past, to a dark age of violence, fanaticism, and terror. I think many of you are already feeling in your own societies the radical Islamist surge. Now, that pissed me off. Who has permitted tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Muslims into Western Europe? Jews have been at the forefront of that. They've assisted in the Islamic attack and in colonization of much of Europe. He says, you know deep down that Israel is fighting your fight. I want to tell you a secret, he says. Behind closed doors, many of the leaders who publicly condemn us privately thank us. Now that's probably the first true statement of his speech. No doubt. All the people who are just following along, saying, yes, Israel's awful in Gaza, who were praising him, you know, before this war started. First true statement of the speech. They tell me how much they value Israel's superb intelligence services that have prevented time and again terrorist attacks on their capitals, time and again saving countless lives. President Trump understands better than any other leader that Israel and America face a common threat. He showed the world that when Iran and its proxies murder Americans, take Americans hostage, shout death to America, burn the flag, try to assassinate the president of the U.S., not once but twice, he showed them there is a price to pay for all of that. Now, I think, is he trying to say that these people tried to kill Trump? There is zero evidence for that. I think some Republicans tried to push that theory for a while. It went absolutely nowhere. But Netanyahu believes it, and frankly, I think, you know, we all know what the word is here. He's deliberately being outrageous. He says, regrettably, many leaders who are represented in this hall, well, the very few left, they've sent a very different message. Sure, in the days immediately following October 7th, many of them supported Israel. But that support quickly evaporated when Israel did what any self-respecting nation would do in the wake of such a savage attack. Now, that begs a question. I hate question begging. It's selective reasoning. And it shows a lot about the Khazar mind. They hate context. We fought back, he said. No, they fought back. That's the issue. Just imagine, he says, Just sit back for a second. Just sit back for a second and imagine an attack against America proportionate to the attack against Israel on October 7th. Imagine a regime, a terror regime, dispatching thousands of terrorists to invade the U.S. They massacred 40,000 Americans, taking 10,000 Americans hostage. So he's trying to make it, you know, our fight. Well, if that bizarre thing would ever occur, it would only be for supporting Israel. It's a childish example. And frankly, if it did happen, the Jewish left would be supporting it. The Jews of the U.S. would depict this as a peaceful migration. The invasion already has happened. It's called migration, especially to Western Europe. Yet over time, many world leaders buckled. They buckled under pressure of a biased media. Could you imagine? The media is Jewish and usually supports Israel, though cracks can be seen. A biased media. He said biased media. They buckled under the pressure of a biased media, radical Islamist constituencies, and anti-Semitic mobs. Well, like Haaretz. Any protest against Israel must be a mob to him. Then he starts to lose it. He says, you condemn us. You embargo us. Israel has not been placed under an embargo by anyone. Certainly not the only one, the people who matter. And you wage political, legal warfare. You know what it's called? It's called lawfare against us. Lawfare created by American Jews to use against people like me. Lawfare. I say to the representative of those nations, this is not an indictment of Israel. It's an indictment of you. It's an indictment of your weak-kneed leaders who appease evil rather than support a nation whose brave soldiers guard you from the barbarians at the gate. They're already penetrating the gate. Well, thanks to many Jewish organizations, they have long since invaded Western Europe. So I don't know what he's talking about. Then he cites someone. He says, the head of urban warfare studies, Colonel John Spencer. Oh boy. He's at the Jerusalem Institute for Security Affairs. He is Mossad. Netanyahu says he's probably the world's expert on urban warfare. Says Israel is applying more measures to minimize civilian casualties than any military in history. And because we're doing that, the ratio of non-combatant to combatant casualties is less than 2-1 in Gaza. He means fewer than 2-1 in Gaza. All right. John Spencer. John Spencer allegedly fought in the Iraq War in 2003, if not earlier. He's in the California Reserve, I believe. But his analysis, even the American Center for Naval Analysis have mocked his arguments. Here's what Spencer says. Spencer says Gazans were called and texted before any attack. So if they stayed, it's their fault. Yet there's no functional cell infrastructure there. Israel texted them all? He called the genocide claim a blood libel. It's a very strange comment for a non-Jew to make. Blood libel. He's not an expert in warfare. He's a tool. Look at his history. He goes from institute to institute, making quite a bit of money. He supports the regime point of view on any foreign policy matter, which is certainly not a coincidence. He's a fraud. Just a week prior to this speech, Israel began a huge bombing campaign against Gaza City. Spencer. Spencer, my ass. UN Committee of Inquiry established UN Human Rights Council concluded that Israeli authorities intended to kill as many Palestinians as possible. How can they even know who's a civilian and who isn't? The UN says they've committed any crime against humanity, the crime of extermination. They say, according to the most authoritative assessment to date, Israel has committed and is committing genocide in Gaza. The reports cite direct targeting of civilians, including children, and mass killings, far larger numbers compared to previous wars. I think something else Spencer came up with was to alert families of a coming bombing raid, they use a non-lethal round. It falls on the roof. It explodes. It's like a knock, like someone's knocking on there. And I'm supposed to, they have to leave if they don't get the text. This idiot. If you look at his resume and his site and elsewhere, he doesn't mention that he's at the Jerusalem Institute. He was at West Point for a while. The truth is that Israel created life-threatening conditions by withholding supplies, medical and otherwise. Acts that seemed calculated to achieve the destruction of Palestinians. That's what the report said. 2-year investigation here. Hundreds of, I'm sick and tired of reading reports on this. They all say roughly the same thing. I've read report after report from all kinds of organizations, some I've never even heard of before. And they all are forced to come to the conclusion Israel committed acts consistent with genocide and had weaponized sexual violence. Colonel Spencer is a hack, to be very polite of it. But that's the only kind of authority he ever cited in this speech. All right, I'm done talking about him. So, he continues. That's an astoundingly low ratio. Lower than NATO's wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, especially when you consider that Gaza is one of the most densely populated urban areas on Earth. It has hundreds of miles of terror tunnels underground and countless terror towers above ground and thousands of terrorists embedded in these tunnels and in these towers in civilian areas. If you want to see what measures Israel takes to avoid civilian casualties in this war, just look what we're doing now in Gaza City, the last Hamas stronghold. One of the two, so he doesn't know if it's one or two. For 3 weeks, Israel has dropped millions of leaflets, sent millions of text messages, and made countless phone calls, urging civilians to leave Gaza City before our military moves in. Now, I know that they have dropped leaflets. The texting stuff, they keep mentioning this, it makes me smile. Especially given their pager attack in Lebanon. I don't know if I'd even use my cellular phone. All reports, the minimum number, is that 90%, 94% of Palestinians killed were civilians. So many can really tell the difference, including more than 30,000 women and children, and that more than 90% of hospitals, schools, and other infrastructure has been destroyed. And they've done this in Lebanon, they did it in Syria. There's nothing new here. They've been doing this for a very long time. But only now have certain politicians noticed. And we're dealing with a collapse of the Zionist idea like I never thought I'd see. He continues. Hamas is a genocidal terrorist organization whose charter calls for the murder of all Jews on the planet. It does not. I don't know what he means by a charter. Its foundational documents say nothing of the kind. I've read it all. But this genocidal organization is given a pass. It's barely mentioned. While Israel does everything it can to get civilians out of harm's way, Israel is put in the dock. What a joke. Want to hear another joke? Israel is accused of deliberately starving the people of Gaza. Israel is deliberately feeding the people of Gaza. Since the beginning of the war, Israel has let into Gaza more than 2 million tons of food and aid. That's 1 ton of aid for every man, woman, and child in Gaza, 3,000 calories per person per day. That's some starvation policy. There are Gazans who don't have enough food. It's because Hamas is stealing it. Hamas steals it, hoards it, and sells it to exorbitant prices to fund its war machine. I think at this point, he is deliberately pissing people off. He's deliberately being, this is why, you know, there was almost no one left at the end. No one but him makes that claim about Hamas. Hamas is a social service organization. That's what it does. It has a military wing, like Hezbollah, same thing. Several reports. You know, the Israelis only allow one group, we've talked about this before, to distribute aid in only 4 areas. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is not a a distributing organization. It's an intelligence organization. Its own army. The IDF says that they're not diverting aid. USAID says that they're not doing it. Israel has imposed full blockades of all aid entering the Strip at various times, most recently between March and May of this year. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, as my listeners know very well, it's only four locations for 2 million people. It relies on armed guards and Israeli soldiers to secure its premises. More than 1,000 people have been killed. They've tried to secure food aid for their starving families. We've dealt with that at length. This is not a humanitarian organization. This is a militant organization. Netanyahu claims issuing forced evacuation orders, which give families very little time to pack up their entire lives and flee or risk being killed, negates the evidence-based findings that genocide is being committed. International Court of Justice for, you know, what a good that does. The International Association of Genocide Scholars. A huge number of international human rights groups who normally are idiots, including the Israeli group, B'Tselem, Amnesty International, have all said the exact same thing. No matter what political point of view you're reading, it comes to the same conclusion. Israel has forbidden your normal aid organizations to come in. It has to control it entirely from the top down. The UN and an army of international organizations and doctors working on the ground in Gaza have testified that Israel is systematically blocking aid while creating a very, very, very unsafe and desperate environment where aid is regularly looted by its own agents. I can't get into that in detail. We've done it before, a few months ago, I believe. Anyway, we continue. Last month, even the UN, not exactly a supporter of Israel, you're supposed to laugh, by the way, you know, he's trying to be light and funny. Last month, even the UN admitted that Hamas and other armed groups looted 85% of the trucks. No, the UN just said the opposite. I've read the reports. He knows he's lying through his teeth. The UN said the exact opposite. That's why you have deprivation. Those who have peddled the blood libels of genocide and starvation against Israel are no better than those who peddled blood libels against the Jews in the Middle Ages. And they falsely accuse us of poisoning wells, spreading plague, and using the blood of children to bake Passover matzahs. I don't know. I'm starting to wonder, because these claims are lies and are widely reported as such, they're going to start looking back at these things and other claims that the Jews have made. Maybe they're lies too. Oh boy. Anyway, he says, this very week, the leaders of France, Britain, Australia, Canada, other countries, unconditionally recognized the concept of the Palestinian state. They did so after the horrors committed by Hamas on October 7th. Horrors praised on that day by nearly 90% of the Palestinian population. Let me say it again. 90% of the Palestinians supported the attack on October 7th. It's not supported them. They celebrated. They danced on the rooftops. They threw candies. That's both in Gaza and in Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, as you call it. Just the way they celebrated another horror 9/11. They danced on the rooftops, cheered, they threw candy. You know what message the leaders who recognized the Palestinian state this week sent to the Palestinians? It's very clear. Murdering Jews pays off. I seem to remember dancing Israelis, too. And he continues, but wait a minute, Mr. Prime Minister, they tell me, who tells you this? No one tells you that. Wait a minute. We believe in a two-state solution, where the Jewish state of Israel will live side by side in peace with the Palestinian state. There's only one problem with that. The Palestinians really don't believe in a two-state solution. They never have. They don't want a state next to Israel. They want a Palestinian land instead of Israel. That's why every time they're offered a Palestinian state, but were required to end the conflict with Israel and recognize a Jewish state, every time over the decades, they turned it down. That is why every time they were given territory, where were they ever given territory? They used it to attack us. In fact, they effectively had a Palestinian state in Gaza. What did they do? Peace? Coexistence? No, they attacked us time and time again, totally unprovoked. Totally unprovoked, he says. The Gaza Strip has been sealed off since at least 2006. It's been under siege, unprovoked. They fired rockets into our city. They murdered our children. They turned Gaza into a terror base from which they committed the October 7 massacre. It's, you know, he's you know, it doesn't help really that his corruption trial has continued. He was back in court a couple of weeks ago. That's definitely not helping his mood here. But the truth of the matter is, Hamas, Hezbollah, they fought back. They were under impossible sanctions. It was an open-air prison. And you know who knows that. Here's the uncomfortable truth. The persistent Palestinian rejection of a Jewish state in any boundary is what has driven this conflict for over a century. Over a century. Still driving it. It's not the absence of a Palestinian state. It's the presence of a Jewish state. And I find it amazing. Amazing. The foreign chancelleries and ministries, and all those who pontificate about this, and the leaders, how can they not see this basic truth? And it's repeated again and again and again ad nauseum. I want to say something else. This rejection of a Jewish state not only applies to Hamas, it also applies to the so-called moderate Palestinian Authority. You should know, the PA, Palestine Authority, pays terrorists to slay Jews. The more Jews a terrorist slays, the more the Palestinian Authority pays. That is not true. Now he's just making stuff up. The Palestinian Authority names its government buildings, its public squares, and its schools after the mass murderers of Jews, which they glorify as martyrs. They pay and glorify not just the killers of Jews, but also the killers of Christians. Christians like Taylor Force, American veteran, murdered in Israel by a Palestinian terrorist. But Western leaders say, they tell me the PA promised that they will reform. I know this time, Prime Minister, it'll be different. Yeah, you've heard those promises for decades. They always promise, they never deliver. The Palestinian Authority is corrupt to the core. They haven't had elections in 20 years. They use the same textbooks as Hamas does, exactly the same textbooks. They teach their children to hate Jews and destroy the Jewish state. These are the people you want to give a state to? What you're doing is giving the ultimate reward to intolerant fanatics who perpetuated and supported the October 7th massacre. And why would they believe anything differently? How did it get to this? They just wake up one morning and decide they hate Jews? This refusal of context, this selective reasoning, this is why debate is impossible. There's nothing to debate. He continues, he says, giving the Palestinians a state a mile from Jerusalem after October 7th is like giving Al-Qaeda a state 1 mile from New York City after September 11th. It's sheer madness. It's insane. We won't do it. So here's another message for these Western leaders. Israel will not allow you to shove terror state down our throats. You will not commit national suicide because you don't have the guts to face down the hostile media, anti-Semitic mobs demanding Israel's blood. There is no hostile media, and there's no such thing as an anti-Semitic mob. Now, if you remember, we talked about the concept of the Palestinian state. He's really talking about the so-called Abraham, the deal of the century in Trump's first term, which I mocked relentlessly. I went through this. I think Jared Kushner wrote this very quickly. He's an idiot. I've read it. I've detailed it. I've done a whole show about it at great length. And here's what it says. I don't really have time to quote it directly, but here are the 19 points of it that I've taken from it. This Palestinian state will have no external foreign policy independence. It will have no economic independence. It will have its economy under an IMF, the international bond and capital markets. It will be forced to have open borders. It will have elections under Israeli military control. It will be protected by the IDF, its longstanding enemy. It won't be allowed to have any military force whatsoever. It will have no control over its educational system, no control over its airspace. It will give all control over its culture to Israel and the U.S. It will have no control over its ports or waters. It will have no currency of its own. It will have internal life, social interaction, religion, and culture under Israeli censorship. It won't have any army or any means of defense. It will have no diplomatic independence. It will be brought under a free trade regime. American and Israeli corporations will easily and rapidly dominate local producers, and it will rule the area as oligarchs. It will have all its political parties and candidates vetted and censored by the U.S. and Israel. will have, by extension, all party platforms censored and controlled by Israel. It will have its elected officials removed at the will of Tel Aviv. It will have no right to even zone its local properties in urban areas. Now, this is very clear in this two-state deal. Other than that, though, it's an independent state. This is what they're talking about by this two-state solution. It's garbage and it's nonsense. This is why they reject it. Anyway, he continues. Western leaders may have buckled under pressure. I guarantee you one thing. Israel won't. Israel's victories over the Iranian terror axis have opened up possibilities for peace that were unthinkable 2 years ago. Take Syria. For decades, the very idea of peace between Israel and Syria seemed unimaginable, but not anymore. Well, what's the truth there? For decades, Israel has waged war on Syria. Sanctions, constant bombings weakened the state of Assad. That was doing extremely well before, and Assad was always very popular. Today, there is no functional state in Damascus. It doesn't rule anything outside of Damascus itself. Israel requires a weak and divided Syria, and that's what you got. Netanyahu says, today we have begun serious negotiations with the new Syrian government. There is no Syrian government. No entity controls all of Syria, not even close. He says, I believe an agreement can be reached that respects Syria's sovereignty and protects both Israel's security and the security of the minorities in the region, including the Druze minorities. Now, from the founding of Israel, Jews and Druze have been brothers in arms. We have fought together. We've bled together. We built our lives together. When I was a young commander in Israel's special forces, my own life was saved by the invaluable advice given to me by a great friend, Salem Shoufi, a heroic Druze IDF veteran. That's why I could not sit idly by, nor could Israel sit idly by, while the Druze were being slaughtered by jihadists. I instructed our forces to stop the massacre, which they promptly did. Now, the Druze came out of nowhere here. Should sound familiar to you. I might have mentioned it before. But I can't tell if the advice saved his life or Salem Shoufi saved his life. And he also doesn't mention what the advice was, oddly enough. Probably because it didn't happen. Peace between Israel and Lebanon is popular too. It's possible as well. I call on the Lebanese government also to begin negotiations with Israel. I commend it for its declared aim to disarm Hezbollah. We need more than words. If Lebanon takes genuine and sustained action to disarm Hezbollah, I am sure we can achieve a sustainable peace. Well, here's the problem. Hezbollah is more popular and stronger than the state. They've actually defeated the IDF several times. There's no motivation for the Lebanese army to do this. They're Lebanese. They have a huge political party. Anyway, of course, until that happens, we will take whatever action we need to defend ourselves and maintain the conditions of life. The conditions of the ceasefire that were established in Lebanon. Our goal is not just to monitor Hezbollah's actions, but to prevent them from violating the ceasefire and attacking us at any time. I'm sure that if the Lebanese government persists in its goal of disarming Hezbollah, peace will come speedily, very readily. Victory over Hezbollah has made peace possible with our two Arab neighbors in the north. Victory over Hamas will make peace possible with nations throughout the Arab and Muslim world. Our victory would lead to a dramatic expansion of the historic Abraham Accords, which President Trump brokered between Arab leaders and myself 5 years ago. I took note, and I'm sure you did too, of the encouraging words spoken here by the President of Indonesia. This is a country with the world's largest Muslim population of all nations. It's also a sign of what could come. By the way, the Indonesians had walked out by this time. So much for that. Forward-looking Arab and Muslim leaders know that cooperating with Israel will provide them with groundbreaking Israeli technologies, medicine and science, agriculture and water, defense and AI, and so many other fields. Yeah, well, subsidized with American dollars. Iran is probably ahead of Israel in many of these respects, especially if the sanctions didn't exist. I believe in the coming years, the Middle East will look dramatically different. Many of those who wage war on Israel today will be gone tomorrow. Brave peacemakers will take their place. We had to beg others to defend us. That never happened. The rise of Israel did not mean the attempts to destroy us would end. meant that we would fight back against those attempts. That's exactly what the Israeli, what Israel has done since October 7th. Our sons and daughters, like lions, our brave soldiers donned their uniforms and rushed into battle. Well, as you know, desertion in the IDF has reached crisis levels by this point. And not just conscripts either. They were armed with the dreams of 100 generations of Jews who came before them. The dream of living as a free people in the land of Israel, our beloved homeland for more than 3,000 years. Yeah. These Jews are Khazar Turks. They are foreigners. Netanyahu and his ilk have no ethnic claim to the area. The dreams of living in our own independent state, the dreams of having an army to defend ourselves, of being a light to the nations, a beacon of progress, ingenuity, and innovation to the benefit of all humanity. On October 7th, the enemies of Israel tried to extinguish this light. 2 years later, the resolve of Israel, the strength of Israel, burned brighter than ever. With God's help, that strength and that resolve will lead us to a speedy victory and a brilliant future of prosperity and peace. So I quoted about, I don't know, two-thirds of it. He had to get in the Israeli supremacy thing there, this beacon of progress which he thinks the Jews are. Netanyahu and Israel really as a unit, it exists because of the Jewish rule over the media and the U.S. government. But because of his actions and of those way before him, that's now being questioned for the first time. And the prime minister is having trouble dealing with it. I'm seeing things that people like us have been saying for decades, being parroted by like journalists, like they've just discovered this. I mean, you know, some of it's phony. Be very careful, these fly-by-night Jewish organizations who are condemning Israeli actions. I mean, Haaretz has been doing it for a long time. You know, that newspaper, that's one thing. But many of these Jewish organizations are functioning, condemning Israel as purely damage control. The reaction to this speech around the world has been, of course, overwhelmingly negative. And yeah, you know, some biased sources. The senior fellow at the Institute of Palestine Studies, Maun Rabbani, he responded this way. He said, "Once again, Israel, a nuclear-armed regional power whose military has occupied the territory of each of its neighbors, plays the victim. For theatrical effect, Prime Minister Netanyahu came to the UN armed not with the Wile E. Coyote cartoon, but rather a rent-a-crowd to provide standing ovations from the stands. It's all rather pathetic." This notwithstanding, there was something deeply satisfactory watching Netanyahu rail on and on about an agreement with Iran he was powerless to prevent. Why he does so is obvious. Israel has used the Iranian threat for decades to divert the world's gaze from its criminal actions against the Palestinian nation. It can be expected to continue to do so for many years to come. I suspect this time around, he has fooled no one, including those recruited to incessantly clap at his meaningless drivel. Listening to Netanyahu call for more negotiations was laughable. George Basharat, who I think is an American, professor at the University of California, College of Law, San Francisco, he said this: "Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu today did his bombastic best to distract the global community's attention from the root cause of his country's conflict with the Palestinians. Israel's nearly seven-decade forcible displacement of Palestinians from their homes and homeland in favor of Jewish settlers. He did this by invoking, in turn, purported threats from Iran and ISIS. Of course, he called for a resumption of direct bilateral negotiations with the Palestinians. For more than two decades, such negotiations have provided a cover for Israel's relentless colonization of Palestinian lands. The global community now faces a quandary. How do you achieve a durable peace based on justice and equality in the post-two-state reality that Israel has imposed?" Unsurprisingly, Hamas condemned the speech. I wasn't shocked when I heard that. They did mention the fact that his claim is that their charter says that Hamas wants to murder every living Jew all around the world. That's just, you know, his systemic campaign to demonize the Palestinian nation. And they came out with a statement that very day, September 26th. They said, Netanyahu's repetition of his own black propaganda and lies regarding the evils of October 7th is merely a backward escape following the collapse of his deceptive propaganda in the face of global public opinion. While the term anti-Semitism has become a tattered pretext he uses to justify his rejection of international positions that condemn the genocide and starvation he has been committing for 23 months. They also note, and this is, a lot of people have been saying this, his feigned grief for the Israeli captives, as well as his pathetic attempt to be claiming to address them through loudspeakers, looking at the camera, saying this is directly going out to the captives. But Netanyahu alone is responsible for obstructing a deal that guarantees their release because of his insistence on warfare and aggression. His reneging on the agreement signed last January, the failed attempt to assassinate the negotiating delegation in Qatar, the international mediator. If he were truly concerned about his captives, he would have stopped his brutal bombardment, genocidal massacres, and the destruction of Gaza City. Instead, he lies and continues to endanger their lives. Hamas also stated, though, the establishment of an independent Palestinian state with Jerusalem as the capital is its inherent inalienable right, and it won't be diminished by the crimes of the occupier nor his sick policies. So Netanyahu was right about one thing. Two states are not going to exist. The deal of the century a few years ago, it would be a make-believe state. It won't be a state at all. One has to come into existence at the expense of the other. And I thought there was an arrest warrant against him. Apparently nothing happened. Normally it would mean nothing, but in this case it might have symbolically done some good. But his speech was one threat after another. Netanyahu is frustrated at not being able to achieve any goals in Gaza. His army has failed to rescue the hostages, failed to defeat Hamas, failed to stop attacks on Israel by various groups within the resistance movement. As of this writing, Israel has lost. Qatar was attacked by Israel, resulting in death, injury, and property damage, regardless of the fact that Qatar hosts the largest American military base in the region. Well, these Arab countries are learning a painful lesson. The Americans cannot be trusted or relied on for security. No kidding. Jews pathologically lack self-reflection. That a violent occupation is not self-defense. They can't maintain this for long. Everything is going black for Netanyahu right now, including his own legal life. His corruption cases, by the way, overwhelmingly, if you have read about them, they've all been his corruption. That he was paying off media owners, Jewish media billionaires, giving them certain, because he was minister of communications for a while, years ago, paying them off so that they would give more positive treatment to him, his rule. That he would do things to harm their competition. And whatever it took, so that he would look better and that their reports would be glowing. The Iraqi case is interesting. They don't get talked about too much. But he did talk about making war on them. It's funny how, you know, every Arab in Iraq, except the ruling class, hates the U.S., U.S. government. The Iraqi ruling class sees the U.S. at best as a temporary ally. The U.S. on September 17th designated four Iraqi and Syrian groups as terrorist organizations. The Al-Nuaba movement and the Saeed al-Shuhada Brigade. Now keep in mind that today's Iraq is a creation of the U.S. But they can't have its army be too large. They've banned conscription. They wrote a constitution. And they keep its land force at a maximum of 120,000, quite by design. And especially since the Ba'ath Party has been banned, many of their more competent leaders have been removed. I mean, the Badr organization alone has 50,000 well-armed veterans at its disposal between Iraq and Iran. They haven't been sanctioned, oddly enough, but it's certainly not been for a lack of trying. That's delicate when it comes to the government that you've created. The government that has demanded, you know, they claim to have liberated Iraq, yet the very same government they've installed demands the U.S. get out. Saddam Hussein built a strong social nationalist state that was prepared to take off into the first world. Now, the Iran-Iraq war was an idiotic, fratricidal slaughter with a very weak cause, very weak foundation. Don't forget, there are plenty of movements within Syria and just without Syria that are pro-Assad. I'm not sure you would count him out forever. The remnants of his army around, the Social Nationalist Party has many thousands of fighters. I don't know. I think there's still a possibility there. Remember, there is no Syrian government like there's no Libyan government. It doesn't function. They have guys, they dress up in suits and stuff. They tell them what to say. You know, that's the Syrian government. But they have no power outside the capital, even within the capital. But when you have the Israelis threatening attacking Iraqi territory, that gets dicey. Iraq's foreign minister, Fuad Hussein, got very upset at this speech. He said, we have a firm stance against threats made by Netanyahu to target these Iraqi factions. These are unacceptable. An attack on any Iraqi is an attack on all of Iraq. He said the withdrawal of American forces from Iraqi territory will be completed in 2026. Now, they've been saying that for a long time. The U.S. has about 2,000 men, or at least admits to about 2,000 men in the country as of today. I don't know what the point of 2,000 men is. They can't do very much. The only good they can do is certainly to be attacked. That would give the U.S. a green light. But the U.S. doesn't have the capacity anymore to do what it did in 1990. Don't forget, it's not just the Houthis. Iraqi resistance factions have carried out dozens of attacks using drones and missiles on Israeli targets since the outbreak of the war. The Iraqi government is a lot like the Lebanese government. They're just a spectator. Their own factions are stronger than they are. They operate an independent political military rhetoric, showcase their strength. They don't care about the state. Of course, there's only two majority Shiite countries in the world, Iran and Iraq. It makes sense that they're going to work together. Prime Minister Mohammed Shia Sudani makes these claims about restricting arms to the state. In other words, you know, the classic definition of a state that has a monopoly on violence. Well, that's never going to happen, just like in Lebanon. That's remained unfulfilled. It will never be fulfilled. The Iraqi government is isolated. It's unpopular. They're just American stooges. At least, though, they're calling on the U.S. to finally leave, which is very bizarre since the U.S. created the country. The fact is that the prime minister, as I mentioned, al-Sudani's government has totally lost control over the armed factions operating outside the law. But, of course, they're a lot more popular than the American-created government in Baghdad. So you have this balance. We need to keep the Iraqi army small. We can't have them be a threat to Israel, depending on the leader. You know, they control elections and everything else, but still, you never know. There could be a coup. But these militias, then, are at least as strong as the state. Netanyahu approached the UN like a typical Jew. He went over every canard the Jews use in every debate I've ever had with them. And to the point where they're so old, people are going to start to question those. The projection is endless. Things like bad behavior is rewarded, it gets worse. Or when bad behavior is rewarded, it gets worse. Well, that's pure projection. That sums up the American response to Israel for 70 years. Netanyahu might know that he's being outrageous. What did he do? He showed up to the UN to mock, to lecture, to attack verbally, and threaten more violence. It was a rant in the true sense of the term. It was a diatribe in the true sense of the term. He went up there and he spoke as if his country is not conquered, occupied, and ethnically cleansed the land of all of its neighbors. He spoke as if his country had not contemptuously violated all kinds of UN resolutions, condemning it all, utter contempt for basic decency. He knows what's going on in Gaza. He knows the situation in Gaza. He's not like Zelensky, where they just tell him what he, you know, what he wants to hear. It's a different story here. 1992, I remember, that was the first time I recall Netanyahu saying that Iran is a week away from making a nuclear bomb. Now, the official number of Palestinians killed by the IDF, they claim about 60,000 since October 7th, hundreds of thousands wounded. Now, you know what I think about that. The true number of dead is more like 250,000 and up, including those who are starving, dying from wounds, buried under rubble. 60,000 figure is propaganda. The Lancet Medical Journal from Harvard said in November of 2024, the true figure then was 186,000. And that might be too low. So, October 1st, 2025, I say 275,000 is reasonable, with overwhelmingly being non-combatants. The 60,000 figure is idiotic. It only deals with identified persons brought to a hospital and have death certificates as a result of Israeli attacks. That is no way to estimate the number of dead. But that's how statistics are manipulated. Hospitals haven't existed for some time in Gaza. Most of the dead cannot be registered at morgues, since none exist. And few were functional throughout the war anyway. It's repeated over and over again, therefore it must be true. Netanyahu's obsession with the first world Iran reveals what Israel fears most: increasing isolation and irrelevance. The Jews in Israel can only conceive of themselves as relevant in a world of endless war. Without their militant enemies, they have no purpose. They'll start killing each other. As Willis Cardo used to say, they need enemies. That's why Netanyahu sabotaged the Iran nuclear deal. He hated the concept of a desire for peace with the Palestinians. At this very moment, bombs are dropping on Gaza City, and bulldozers are tearing up Palestinian communities and replacing them with Jewish-only settlements. Who was he really? How many friends was he making? Was he there to make friends? This hostility, this bitter diatribe. The only thing that it could do, I think it could, is open even more minds. More minds to the reality that we've always known. What not only Zionism is, but what Judaism is. The lies and the mythology. If they're lying about Gaza, what else are they lying about? Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.